Blog Talk Radio.
The Late Shift with Stephen Bell is presented live and uncensored and contains adult language. The views, opinions, and verbiage expressed do not reflect those of LordsOfPain.net, Lords of Pain Radio, Blog Talk Radio, or any of their respective advertisers. That's all on me, for better or for worse. Regardless, listener discretion is advised. Now let's do this thing. One, two, three, five. And now, coming to you live from the Late Shift Studios, recapping Monday Night Raw here on Lords of Pain Radio, it's the Late Shift with Stephen Bell, with your host, well, me. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome once again to The Late Shift with Stephen Bell. I'm your host, Stephen Bell, hence why my name is in the title. And man, that was an interesting episode of SmackDown, wasn't it? Yeah, some things happened. Most of it was fairly straightforward, you know, not uncommon from the stuff that you would expect to see, but there was one big thing, and we'll be talking about that here in just a moment. But hey, thanks for joining in the show. If you would like to get at me on Twitter, you can do so at Stephen F. and Bell, and I will be happy to chit-chat with you about this or that, whatever it is you may want to throw my way. You can also find me on Facebook. You can look for the show, The Late Shift with Stephen Bell, and find it, share it around, all that good stuff. I'm more than happy to chit-chat with you there as well. And last night was a pretty good one. We had some fun on the Late Shift last night talking about Raw because we had an interesting episode of Raw. It was fun. There was no Roman Reigns, which made a lot of people happy, and which also kind of made for just, even if you do like Roman, it was just kind of a different vibe, a different dynamic around Raw, which was pretty cool. And then we come into SmackDown tonight, and I had kind of the same questions that I had last night. You know, going into Raw, I was wondering, okay, how are they going to incorporate the new people that they just picked up from SmackDown? Will they be used in a way that I think is cool, that, you know, that I'm fond of, or are they just going to be kind of wasted talent? What's going to be the deal there? I had the same questions going into tonight as it pertains to SmackDown. What are they going to do with the people they picked up from Raw? Are they going to put them in positions that everybody is cool with and, you know, that could be useful to them? And, well, they used some of the people they got from Raw. It went well in some areas, and it went, I don't want to say it went bad, but it went questionable in other areas. But, there's really, at this point, there's no need to beat around the bush. Let's just go ahead and jump headlong into this thing, okay? It is time right now for the
Heat Seeker.
And, well, the Heat Seeker this evening, at least here on the Late Shift, and I'm thinking just about everywhere else, on Twitter, and just at least based on what I saw on Twitter, and across the wrestling world right now, the Heat Seeker of the moment would be one Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal, a guy that a lot of people, you know, when SmackDown picked him up last week, I don't think that it was really considered all that big of a deal, you know? He was a guy that was, you know, he was... I kind of figured that he was, you know, on par with some of the lower end guys, like maybe a Kalisto or something like that. You know, some of the Raw got a few lower down the card type dudes. So did SmackDown. And, you know, SmackDown, though, has the reputation of being, it's the, you know, the land of opportunity. So I was thinking that, okay, maybe some of these guys will get handled a little bit better over on SmackDown, like the Shining Stars. They were pretty much complete afterthoughts at this point over on Monday Night Raw, but on SmackDown, maybe they could gain new life and all that stuff, and we'll talk about them later. I got a positive vibe going on from what they're doing, but as it pertains directly to Jinder Mahal, I think everyone just kind of figured, okay, he's going to be around, you know, good for him. You know, he probably just will go out there and job to random people, you know, maybe he'll become like a higher upper echelon jobber, you know, because he was just losing to Finn Balor here a couple weeks ago in a match that was just over a week ago, actually, in a match that was hotly debated because over the course of the match, if you didn't know, he caught our boy Finn Balor with an elbow upside the head, and he knocked him down, and Balor, I don't know if it was the elbow that caught Finn wrong, or it certainly appears as though it knocked him out. it looked like it knocked him out because Balor like straight up just face planted into the mat. Not like a Ric Flair face plant or anything that's all theatrical. No, he had mat burn on his nose because he just straight up face planted into the mat. And so a lot of people, Jinder had some heat with quite a few people as a result of that. I just kind of chalk it up as being, it kind of is what it is. I don't think Jinder was trying to hurt Finn Balor by any stretch of the imagination. It was just something that kind of got a little bit miscommunicated. And this is professional wrestling. As, you know, many have said back in the day, this ain't ballet, as JR specifically was fond of putting it. This ain't ballet. This is wrestling. It's physical. You know, things are going to happen every once in a while that are kind of unfortunate. So I don't really, Jinder don't have any heat with me as it pertains to quote-unquote hurting Finn Balor. It was an accident that happened in the ring. Shit happens, you know, and Balor wasn't exactly, you know, horribly injured. He just wrestled last night on Monday Night Raw. You know, he had a minor concussion. He was out for a little bit. It was apparently nothing that really, really needed to be, something that we should hate Jinder Mahal for moving forward. You know what I mean? But he has kind of noticeably been getting a little bit more of a push, and a lot of people attribute that to his new physique. And if you listen to the Late Show Shift regularly here, then you know that we've discussed that physique a few times, and I kind of take a little bit of umbrage with people who have been just immediately pointing their finger and saying steroids. That's just a bit much, you know, aside from the fact that I don't believe it to be true, because I'm quite sure that when he showed back up in the company and had this ripped up physique, I'm almost positive. I would virtually guarantee that they started drug testing the dude. Now, does that mean that he's not on anything? No, not necessarily. If he is, it is apparently prescribed in some way, shape, form, or fashion. But apart from all of that, just because somebody was not muscular when they left WWE in 2014 does not mean that when they show back up in 2016, approximately a year and a half-ish later, it was almost 2 years later. It was almost exactly 2 years later, just shy of like a month of 2 years later, now that I look at it here, that the guy can't, you know, change his diet and get a little bit more ripped and lean and mean looking and everything. John Cena, specifically, if you'll look back at John Cena's career, look at the way that he looks now. He's a big, bulky dude and everything like that. But if you look back at before his WWE days, when he was doing some bodybuilding and whatnot, he was ripped to shreds as well. It depends on your diet. It depends on what kind of workouts that you're doing. There are ways to get ripped. You know, you can be big and you can be ripped, and you know, the two are not mutually exclusive. Just because somebody is ripped up and has vascularity and whatnot does not mean that they're on steroids. But that has been the common thing that has been thrown around, and I'm sure a lot of people are talking about that now. I saw a lot of comments about how Jinder is going to be getting himself a push right now, because rumors were popping up here around last week that apparently, or have at least a nugget of truth to them, that Jinder was staring down the barrel of a bit of a push. And everybody immediately was just like, oh, well, that's because Vince is a body guy. Vince loves bodies. Vince loves ripped-up body guys, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I'm sure that that's true to a degree. But also I think that it has something to do with the fact that, as Jinder mentioned on Talking Smack last week, he went out there in the 2 years that he spent away from the company. He improved his physique. He improved at his profession overall. He made a little bit more of a name for himself. Because, I mean, for the duration of his time in WWE previously, he was an also-ran. I mean, he was just a guy that was around. The most noteworthy thing that the guy did was that he was in 3MB for a couple of years. And that was not exactly the most noteworthy thing in the entire world. You know, no, that was Heath Slater's thing more than anything else. Jinder was, you know, he was very much the third guy even in that group. So Jinder never really did much of anything of note. And whether that has to do with his level of ability within the ring or lack thereof, you know, that's debatable. But he apparently took it upon himself to go out there and actively try to improve himself. And he has done so in some ways, in a very obvious way as it pertains to his physique and his overall presentation and look. His in-ring is a little bit better. I mean, barring that stiff elbow that he threw last week to Finn that we just spoke about, it seems, you know, I mean, he seems better, you know, but then again, as I mentioned before, he was very forgettable in his first run, so I don't know if he was any good or not, frankly, just because I don't remember a single Jinder Mahal match from his initial run with the company. But based on what we've seen since he showed back up and, you know, almost a year ago in July of last year, he's been okay. I mean, he's been, you know, a jobber guy. So, I mean, it's, you know, it kind of is what it is. It's really kind of hard to gauge a guy when you've got him out there and he's just basically doing jobs to any and everybody. But, you know, the stuff he was doing with Rusev, he was doing a lot of the in-ring work there, and he was doing just fine. He seems like he has improved is what I'm getting at here. He spent 2 years away from WWE. He came back a fairly changed individual. And I think that it is less a thing where Vince is just a body guy and more so kind of a thing where they're rewarding him. You know, I think that they're rewarding him for the fact that he went out there and he did exactly what they tell him to do. You know, and most of the time when they release people, they tell them, well, the door's always open. You can just go out there and do what you got to do. And maybe you'll come back one day. And what they're basically saying to people is get out there and improve. And, you know, if we see something, we'll bring you on back. And Jinder went out there and did what he was supposed to do. You know, he went out there, he got shredded, he improved his in-ring game, they brought him back, he rolled along there on the lower mid-card there for the last good little bit, then kind of flirted with the middle mid-card when he was doing the stuff with Rusev, and then as of last week, you know, I mean, well, just a few weeks ago when at WrestleMania, he was the second runner-up in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Now, that's not exactly a choice gig. It's not like your boy is, you know, co-main eventing Mania or anything like that, but it wasn't nothing. You know, it was noteworthy, and he also gathered a bit of steam because you saw him all over ESPN and things of that nature because of his interaction with Gronk, which everybody hated, myself included. But, you know, hey, it is worth mentioning. The guy got a degree of mainstream notability as a result of that, and it's kind of been looking like maybe they wanted to do a little something more with him. Well, we're not going to beat around the bush for too much here because I say all of that just to mention what happened this evening on Monday Night Raw. We had ourselves a six-pack challenge to crown the new number one contender to the WWE Championship. I'm assuming it's confusing. I was under the impression that the House of Horrors match between Bray and Randy was going to be Bray's rematch for the WWE Championship, but it does not appear that is the case now. They are operating under the assumption, or they're presenting and giving us the assumption that Randy Orton's going to be the champion no matter what. So whoever won this match was not just going to face the champion. They were saying that the winner of this match will face Randy Orton for the WWE Championship at the next SmackDown pay-per-view, which I believe is Backlash next month in May. So I'm really wondering what the hell the point is in this whole Bray Randy thing, aside from the fact that they jumped the gun a little bit and had it pre-booked. You know, they talked about they wanted to make it happen. Somebody had the idea. The indications have been that even upon announcing it, they didn't exactly know what the hell it was even going to be. So I don't know why they didn't just hold off. They should have, instead of having that confrontation between Randy and Bray that set up the House of Horrors match, what they should have done was just have the championship rematch. That would have been a really big way to present SmackDown. You know, SmackDown also trying to establish the fact, hey, you know, the Raw after WrestleMania is a big deal. Well, so is the SmackDown after WrestleMania from now on, since we're live now. That would have been one hell of a way to do it, to have a championship rematch. And then the next week, Bray could have switched over, and we could have been done with this entire, you know, cluster of a thing, because it certainly is a cluster. It was the worst part of Monday Night Raw last night, and it was the worst part of SmackDown tonight. This Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton thing, I'm just counting down until it's over with. And I like Bray Wyatt. I like him a lot, actually, but this is just—it's dumb. It's powerful dumb. And I mentioned last night on the late shift, I'm not going to say that this House of Horrors match is going to outright suck. But I get the feeling that even if they are able to pull off some pretty cool stuff in there, that we're going to wind up with something that ultimately is just a little too much for this reality era, you know, self-proclaimed reality era of WWE. But that's a whole nother topic. What I'm getting at here is that basically we had the six-pack challenge tonight. Not to crown a new number one contender for the championship, no matter who has it, but it would appear, because in the initial graphics for the House of Horrors match, it was Bray's face and Randy's face, and they had the championship in the background, so they were, I might have to go back and check that just to make absolutely positive, but I am almost absolutely positive that they were presenting it a couple of weeks ago when it was booked as being for the championship, and it seems that as of this week, that has officially been dropped. So apparently when Bray switched shows, he gave up any and all rights to his rematch for the championship, which is weak sauce, You know what I mean? Unless I'm just reading the situation wrong. At the very least, what they have done is they have presented something that is confusing, because I do this every week and talk about this stuff every week. And if I'm having trouble figuring out what the hell they're talking about, then I can only imagine that everybody else is as well. You know, I'm not a stupid person. So that kind of is what it is. But anyway, we had that six-pack challenge tonight. The winner will presumably face Randy Orton at Backlash here next month. And it was between a very motley crew of people. And no, I ain't talking about Vince Neil, Nikki Six. None of them were involved. We had Dolph Ziggler, who wishes he was in Motley Crue, probably. We had Eric Rowan. We had Luke Harper, Mojo Rawley, Sami Zayn, and the previously mentioned Jinder Mahal, which is the reason we're talking about this right now. Not exactly the most badass grouping of fellows there, you know what I mean? I got nothing but love for Luke Harper, and I was frankly pulling for Luke Harper. But arguably, if you're looking at this grouping of six folks, the biggest name in this was Dolph Ziggler. And if, you know, because he's a multi-time former champion, some would argue Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn is probably the most popular of the bunch right now. I think that that's fairly easy to say. But Dolph Ziggler, just if you're looking at his resume, he's former world champion, stuff like that, you know. So he was like the biggest guy in this entire thing. And this is for the number one contendership to main event to pay-per-view. So it was very I was scratching my head going into the damn thing. And it was what it was. It was a pretty good match, you know, for what it was. It was decent, a lot of good back and forth. They kept me guessing as to what was going to happen. As I said, I was really kind of pulling for Harper, but I wouldn't hurt my feelings very much to see Sami Zayn get the victory either. Kind of a babyface versus babyface thing working. And, I mean, I wouldn't have been a huge fan of it, but it wouldn't have, you know, made me want to cry into my pillow if Dolph Ziggler would have got the victory. Dolph Ziggler versus Randy Orton has the potential to be halfway decent, you know. We've seen it before, and it wasn't bad. It just It wouldn't have been anything to write home about. Plus, we know that Dolph seems to be kind of beginning an interaction with Shinsuke Nakamura. But anyways, what it boils down to, and you could probably guess, if you didn't see SmackDown, you could probably guess where this all went based upon what we talked about before we got to this. Jinder Mahal won. Yeah, but it was how he won that made it somewhat interesting. Sami Zayn looks like he is stringing things together. He sends Jinder into the ring post. He charges into the corner there. He runs the ropes, leaps out onto Harper. He goes over to the apron, and Rowan grabs his leg. Mojo then floors Rowan outside before he can do anything to Sami. Sami hits the big springboard moonsault onto Mojo on the floor, and then we're left with Sami and Jinder Mahal in the ring. Sami with the big exploder into the corner. He is setting up for the Huluva kick in the opposite corner. Looks like he's about to hit that, but two dudes in white coats pop up, and they grab his legs. And it took me a second to register who it was, but I was like, oh, that's the Bollywood Boys. And then things kind of started clicking into place. It's like, oh, okay. The Bollywood Boys popped up and grabbed his legs to prevent him from doing the Huluva kick. That distracted him enough for Jinder to come over there. He dropped Sami with a big move of some sort. It was kind of like a half Nelson slam type. It was more like a camel clutch into a slam or something to that effect. And he gets the one, the two, and the three. So your winner of this match and the new number one contender for the WWE Championship is Jinder Mahal, which is bizarre. Because this dude he's a jobber, you know? He was the jobberiest of all the dudes in this match, with the possible exception of Eric Rowan. This is the jobberiest dude in this entire match. Many would point to him as the absolute least likely guy to win this six-pack challenge, even given that the guys who were involved, you know, weren't exactly a who's who of the SmackDown roster as of the moment. You know what I mean? It's not like Nakamura was in there and AJ Styles, Baron Corbin. No, it wasn't like that. Why Baron Corbin wasn't involved is another question entirely, but that's something that will just have to float out there in the ether and everybody will just have to wonder about. He was the least likely guy to win this, in my estimation. Because, I mean, hell, even Eric Rowan probably had a better shot than Jinder, at least I thought going into it, because Eric has the history with Bray. That would kind of be a way to maybe elevate Eric Rowan a little bit and carry on and just kind of finish off, put a nice little bow on the whole Wyatt family thing. Eric Rowan versus Randy Orton. Orton gets the victory, but Rowan gets the bump of having been in a championship match, so it elevates him a little bit, and everybody's happy, you know what I mean? This isn't unheard of, even with whether it had been Eric, or if it winds up, you know, well, now that we know it, it's going to wind up being Jinder Mahal. After the match is all said and done, before we delve into that, he celebrates, and Renee Young gets in there to talk to him. And everybody's booing, and he's like, oh, are you guys booing me because I'm not American? You know, is it because of my family's wealth, my higher education, the fact that I speak two languages? Most Americans don't accept diversity, but you will have no choice but to accept Jinder Mahal as your next WWE champion. His music starts to play, but it is interrupted by the music of Randy Orton, who makes his way out there. He says that Jinder should be congratulated. He has won the jackpot, but unfortunately for him, his prize won't be the WWE Championship. It will be the RKO. That's the only thing that he's going to win. he says, but before I put my hands on you, I've got another thorn in my side. So immediately, standing face to face with this man, he starts talking to Bray Wyatt. He just completely dismisses him. And then the lights go out, and Bray Wyatt pops up there on the screen, and they start, you know, doing that whole thing, and Bray is talking smack about the whole House of Horrors, whatnot, and Bray, and that's it. That's the end. It's not like Jinder Mahal jumped him from behind or nothing. They kind of, you know, this is the biggest, easily the biggest win of Jinder's career, and he wound up kind of looking like a punk there to a degree, but that's a whole other thing. I'm trying to look on the bright side with this, though, okay? I'm not a huge Jinder Mahal fan. I do think that this is a mistake, that it really should have been done in a more gradual way. It would have made more sense for him to start stringing some matches together and start winning some matches against some various opponents with the help of the Bollywood boys. You know, let's present them as a unit, and then you could insert him into – you could start to slowly but surely elevate him over the course of a little bit. I think they were trying to go for shock factor, and that's why they went ahead and did it this evening because, as I mentioned, Jinder Mahal, probably the least likely guy to win this entire match. So I think they were going for a little bit of shock factor, and that is what it is. Okay, that – I don't think it was a good move, but I appreciate it for what it is. But as to everybody who was really upset about this, I get it, because Jinder has never really proven that he is worth anything. But at the same time, has he ever really been given the opportunity to do so? You know, this could be his opportunity to shine. It's not the first time that something like this has happened, as I was mentioning a moment ago. You know, I remember it used to be a somewhat common practice back in the original brand split. Every once in a while, you would just see some random person kind of come up out of the middle of nowhere, win a number one contenders match, and they've got a match against the champion, Undertaker, Brock Lesnar, whoever it may be. That's how John Cena really got rolling pretty hard. You know, John Cena just kind of randomly showed up, and he was that random dude. Then he became the rap guy. But his first big championship match was out of the middle of nowhere. This guy wasn't even really that much of a mid-card title contender at that point. I don't even think that he had a U.S. title to his credit by that point or anything of that sort. And here he is challenging Brock Lesnar on pay-per-view out of the middle of nowhere. So it's not like it's unprecedented. I mean, they did the same thing with Hardcore Holly back in the day. It was a one-time thing because he had beef with Brock over, you know, his neck having been broken in the ring with Brock. But you get what I mean here. They've done things like this in the past. I don't know that it has ever been quite as extreme as the Jinder Mahal thing, because this is a dude who is, if the Job Squad were still a thing in WWE, this guy would be a charter member of the Job Squad. He'd be hanging out with Al Snow and the Blue Meanie and them. Right there alongside Goldberg and whatnot. He'd be holding the sparkler as Goldberg comes on outside to, you know, wreak whatever havoc he's going to wreak. Jinder Mahal, not a big timer. So I'm cautiously optimistic, I suppose, because again, it's not unprecedented. I don't think that this is something that is beyond the pale necessarily. I think it is highly unusual. I am not exactly in favor of it. I think that it could have been handled a whole lot better. As of right now, I don't like it. Okay, as of this exact moment, I don't like it that Jinder Mahal is the number one contender to the WWE Championship. And it's not necessarily because of Jinder himself. It is because of the fact that the company has never given me any reason whatsoever to give a crap about Jinder Mahal. So why am I all of a sudden now supposed to be like, oh, crap, he's the number one contender? And that seemed to be the reaction that was going, you know, the live crowd and stuff. Most people on Twitter that I saw were all like, oh, I just turned off SmackDown. This is, you know, basically reacting as though it was a travesty, you know, as though Hornswoggle made his triumphant return to SmackDown, won a number one contenders match, and that at Backlash is going to be Hornswoggle versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. That is the reaction that a lot of people seem to have, as though Jinder Mahal was just the absolute bottom of the barrel worst wrestler that ever happened in the history of professional wrestling. And that is just not true. We haven't been given any reason to give a crap about him. So The thing that I take away from that is that I'm going to try to give a crap about him. We've got around a month or so before this championship match goes down. I would presume that they are going to continue to build him over the course of the next few weeks. I don't know exactly when Backlash is, but I'm sure I could find that out very, very easily. Let's see here. Doodly-doodly-doo. Yeah, this and that, blah, blah, blah. He's the number one contender. So I got to go all the way up here and type in Backlash 2017, and hopefully that will take me where I need to go. WWE Backlash, and yeah, it's coming up on May the 21st, so we are approximately a month away from this, whatever it's going to be. Randy Orton, presumably, unless they throw us another curve with the Bray Wyatt thing. Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal for the championship will be taking place in just over a month from now. So that's plenty of time for them to build him and do some more stuff with him. Maybe try to make something cool out of this. Establish the Bollywood Boys as really kind of being his crew. That can work. You give somebody some heaters, and that can work pretty well for you. That's how, you know, Dolph Ziggler had arguably the best run of his career. Once he got AJ Lee and Big E behind him, you know, he started running game a little bit. And apart from then, he hasn't really ever been able to do a hell of a lot of anything. But, you know, it worked out well for him there. Multiple people have done this over time. You give them a crew, and suddenly they can do a little bit more damage once they're given the opportunity to do so. So I'm going to give Jinder that opportunity. But I can't say that I'm exactly looking forward to it, nor do I. I mean, to be completely honest with you, I'm not seeing that he's necessarily going to capitalize on it a whole lot. I don't see Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal being that good of a match. You know, it just doesn't sound like something I want to see. And good Lord, if a month from now, if just over a month from now, I'm doing an Aftershock show for Backlash and dealing with the fact that Jinder Mahal is the new WWE champion, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be very interesting. I don't even know. I'm really thinking that this is going to be more along the lines of, I mentioned John Cena before in his feud with Brock Lesnar. That really established John Cena more than anything else that he did in that beginning year or so of his career when it really started in earnest, when he was the heel rappy guy before he turned into the babyface rappy guy, and then the Big Show became the kind of the thing that kicked all that off, him beating him for the U.S. title. But before that, it was the match with with Brock Lesnar. That's where he got his finisher moves. You know, instead of the F5, it was the FU and all that good stuff. I could see them doing that here with Jinder. This, as opposed to this being Jinder Mahal is legitimately the number one contender, we're supposed to accept him as the greatest guy in the whole wide world, which is, I think, the way a lot of people are reading it. I think that I am going to take this as an example of, okay, they are presenting him as this thing, and this is just kind of a way to jumpstart his career so that he can be something a little bit bigger and better down the road. Because coming out of having had a championship match against Randy Orton, just like Eric Rowan, when I mentioned earlier, if they had done that, then Eric Rowan would be in a better position to maybe do a little bit better for himself and have a better career and be higher up in the mid-card and stuff like that, do a little bit of damage after he lost to Randy Orton. Same goes for Jinder Mahal. So I think that this is premature. I don't think that this was booked very correctly, but at the same time, this is an open window for Jinder Mahal to bust through and show us all. You know what I mean? Maybe he messes around and becomes the most badass thing on SmackDown. A year ago this time, nobody was liking Braun Strowman. Bear that in mind. Everybody pretty much hated Braun Strowman and was lamenting the fact that this big, giant guy that Vince had a hard on over was just going to come in and wreck shop and beat any and everybody. And there was talk of him facing Undertaker at WrestleMania, and everybody hated that. There was talk of him facing Brock. Everybody hated that. Had that happened this year, Braun Strowman versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania, everybody would have been super happy. The prospects of Braun Strowman versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, everybody seems happy about that. Sometimes all it takes is a little bit of time and some effort put in, and something that you didn't think was going to work can wind up working. So I am going to give Jinder Mahal and this push the benefit of the doubt. But there's a lot of doubt there. They've got a very sizable mountain of doubt. This ain't no molehill. This is a mountain of doubt that they're going to have to overcome, but maybe they can do it. They've got a month until the pay-per-view goes down. We'll see how they handle it up until then, and what will be very interesting to see is the aftermath of that, whether or not they hotshot that title onto him and everybody immediately decides that they hate him. That could be the worst thing they could do. Or if he just goes out there, acquits himself well, loses the match, but then goes on to kind of lead more of an upper mid-card style career. I don't see necessarily a big problem with that if he earns it. if he earns it, and if this whole teaming with the Bollywood boys thing and all that stuff, this new gimmick of sorts, if that works out. So we'll see. We'll see. Like I said, I am, as of this moment, I am proceeding with quite a bit of doubt, but I am giving Jinder Mahal and this push the benefit of the doubt. I would advise you to do the same thing because, I mean, what can you do about it? You can bitch about it on Twitter, but that's not going to accomplish anything. This is already set in stone. Now you get to choose how you take it. You can either complain about it or you can be somewhat accepting of it and just roll with the punches and see what happens. You know, at least be open to this guy impressing you. Because again, as I just mentioned, nobody was impressed by Braun Strowman a year ago, and now he's the hottest guy in the company. So it can happen. It can happen. It's just a matter of time and waiting to see what they give us. Hopefully, it's good stuff. But we will see. We will see. Time remains to tell the tale on that one. We'll probably get a good indication next week as to what we're going to see, and I'll be here to tell you all about it here on The Late Shift. But we're going to talk about the rest of SmackDown here in just a moment. There was a lot more stuff that went on. We got ourselves a new number one contender for the Women's Championship. We had all sorts of stuff going on. We had a tag team match. We had the re-debut of the Shining Stars, who are no longer the Shining Stars. We had the first ever Face of America Open Challenge from Kevin Owens, which, I mean, that just has entertainment written all over it, doesn't it? And we had AJ Styles in the main event. I mean, just all kinds of good stuff going on here, you know what I mean? So it was a pretty interesting episode of SmackDown. We'll break down the rest of it here in just a moment. But first, we got to pay some bills up in this piece. I invite you to check this thing out right here. All right, we are back in the mix here, and it is time to recap SmackDown Live. And yeah, it was an interesting one tonight for all the reasons that were mentioned, and we'll break it all down here. But we began the show with a little bit of sadness. Matt Anawai, famously known as Rosie from 3 Minute Warning and from teaming with the Hurricane, and you know, he was the superhero in training and, you know, various stuff like that, he passed away. Today or yesterday, he's passed away sometime within the last couple of days, at the age of 47, some sort of heart issue apparently that had plagued him over the course of the last couple of years and it caught him. He is Roman Reigns' older brother and of course related to many of the other folks within the Anawai family. So that sucks. That sucks. I believe, I might be wrong about this, he was either the brother of or the cousin of Umaga, of course, who was his compatriot in 3 Minute Warning. They're all interconnected and stuff. You know, that Anawai family is very, very large and storied and has a fantastic legacy. Rosie had his part within that legacy. Matt had his part within that legacy. And it will always carry on in that fashion. Very unfortunate that we lost Matt Rosie Anawai at the age of 47. And I'll give him a little moment of silence here just because I was a big fan of the superhero in training. We got a video package after the tribute graphic at the beginning there, looking at last week's Superstar Shakeup and all the stuff that went down there. And we begin with the largest get. I'm sticking by that. Shane McMahon said it. I echoed it last week on the first edition of The Late Shift covering SmackDown. And I echo it again once more. I think that Charlotte Flair was the biggest get of the entire Superstar Shakeup last week. That's a big deal. That's a game changer. I think it has the biggest impact across both shows. That's big stuff. And she begins officially SmackDown Live this evening. She makes her way out there. She's wearing a really badass black robe thing. You know, it looked fly as hell. It looked like $1 million. She looked like $1 million, as she always does. Charlotte is just, she's the total package, man. She's awesome. I got a lot of love for Charlotte. Like a lot of, she's one of my favorite wrestlers in the company, period, at this given point in time. I'm a big Charlotte mark. We have Tom Phillips, of course, JBL Byron Saxton over there on commentary. Charlotte gets into the ring, takes the microphone, and she says that the Queen has arrived to SmackDown. She actually arrived 7 days ago, and she says, well, it's been 7 days, and I've already lost my patience. What is taking so long? You know, did Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan, did they start summer vacation early or something like that? She hopes that they have because, man, if not, they're about to feel the fury of a scorned queen. She's been here for 7 days already. Why hasn't she been given a SmackDown Women's Championship match as of yet? She says she's only going to ask one more time, what is taking so long? of course, playing her usual role and being very, you know, she gets everything that she wants. She's the queen. You're just supposed to give it up to her immediately. Well, things don't operate exactly like that over here on SmackDown Live, and that is illustrated by the fact that the music hits and out comes Naomi, the women's champion, the SmackDown women's champion. She makes her way out there, and she reminds Charlotte where she's at on SmackDown Live, where she is the champion. She says she's been watching Charlotte for a long time, and, man, she hates to see Charlotte begging like this. That, of course, gets a bemused laugh out of the queen. Naomi says that she's going to give Charlotte what she wants because she's never scared. She ain't never scared. She ain't never scared. She lays the title down, says they're going to do this right here, right now, and she immediately just attacks Charlotte. She decks her upside the face. She's tackling her, whooping up on her a good little bit. Charlotte goes out to the floor. A referee runs down there trying to prevent her from getting back into the ring. She winds up getting back up on the apron, but Naomi knocks her back down one more again, and then the music hits. Here comes the money. Money talks. Here we go. Here comes the money. And yes, all of that, it does happen within the first, like, second of that song. Listen to it. Listen to it. A lot of stuff going on there. A lot of activity within Shane O'Mac's tune. And there is Shane O'Mac, the SmackDown commissioner. He makes his way out there. Daniel Bryan, not around this week, it would seem. He's on baby patrol because Brie is basically pretty best. Last I saw, Brie is due to pop just any moment now. So Shane O'Mac's out there handling business. He says that we are indeed going to see these two fight tonight. But this is SmackDown. This is the place where, you know, people are given opportunity. It is the land of opportunity. But you have to earn that opportunity. Superstars here have to earn their spots. They have to earn their shots. Whether they're, you know, they have the resume, the pedigree, whatever it may be, you still got to earn it. So tonight what we're going to get is it will be Naomi versus Charlotte. And if Charlotte can get the victory, then she will indeed become the number one contender and will get a championship match next week on SmackDown. Shane wishes them both the best of luck, and his music hits. Charlotte looks on and everything. You know, she goes to get back into the ring, though, and she does. She unloads on Naomi with a bit of a sneak attack. She dumps Naomi out to the floor, stands tall with the title, but Naomi ain't done. She ain't never scared. As she said, she jumps back in there, lays Charlotte out on the floor one more again, and raises the title in the air as her music plays. So that's set up for later on in the evening. It will be essentially a number one contenders match, but you know, of course, if Naomi wins, then somebody else can be number one contender. But if Charlotte gets the victory, number one contender for the women's title and gets a shot next week. Still to come, the six-pack challenge that we mentioned in the Heat Seeker segment there with all those various folks involved. We go to commercial. When we return, there is Natalya waiting on Shane. Before he can even get back to his office, Natalya is there waiting on him. She is really not happy with the fact that Charlotte has received special treatment here. She says nobody deserves a shot but her. And Shane's like, well, I hate to remind you, but at WrestleMania 33, you had a championship opportunity, and it slipped through your fingers. She's like, that's not really an opportunity. He's like, well, you know, if you want a singles shot, all you had to do was ask. Charlotte did. Charlotte went out there and asked for an opportunity, so she gets an opportunity. But Natalya really doesn't seem very happy. She thinks that it should just be assumed that she gets a shot. But long about that time, in comes Carmellsworth. Yes, Carmella and James Ellsworth. Carmella agrees about Charlotte. You know, no one deserves to be the face of the division but her. Meaning Carmella. You know, that's where she disagrees with Natalya a little bit. And, of course, Ellsworth has his say on the subject. And then in comes Tamina, who also arrived last week. Tamina Snuka makes her way in there. She says she wants to know about her title shot. Hell, you ain't even been around. You ain't wrestling a match in forever in 10 days. What the hell you get a title shot for? Who you beat? But they're all arguing all over the place, and they're fighting. And Shane looks like he's trying to gain a little bit of order, but he is unsuccessful. Natalya winds up calming everybody down, and she says, you know, management seems to have their own plans, but I have one of my own. Come on, we'll talk about this. So she takes all the various folks who are standing there, Carmella, Tamina, James Ellsworth. They go off to chit-chat about whatever it is that Natalya has in mind, and it will be something presumably pertaining to Charlotte and Naomi, or just Charlotte or just Naomi, something in that general vein. But then we go to the ring, and it is time for that six-pack challenge for the number one contendership. We got Dolph Ziggler, Eric Rowan, Luke Harper, Mojo Rawley, Jinder Mahal, and Sami Zayn. As mentioned in the Heat Seeker portion there, Sami Zayn probably the fan favorite to win this. I was personally pulling for Luke Harper just because I'd like to see Luke Harper get a nice little push right about now. The guy, he's slimmed down. He looks like $1 million. He's a very talented fellow, and he deserves a break. You know what I mean? And Dolph Ziggler, of course, is always a contender when he is in the ring for virtually anything. I've had my negative things to say about Dolph Ziggler and his career and the way that he carries himself and presents himself and the way he wrestles and this and that and blah, 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 blah. But the bottom line of the situation is that at the end of the day, if Dolph Ziggler is in the ring, he is in contention for winning whatever is on the line, be it a mid-card title, be it a tag team title, be it the world title. Doesn't matter. If Dolph Ziggler's in there, you at least have to give him a small percentage of a chance to get the victory. And as mentioned also, he was the biggest star involved in this thing. He was the only one who has a championship pedigree involved in this match. So, very intriguing. The bell rings, and everybody immediately starts to go at it. Sammy and Harper are working each other over. They're fighting. Jinder, of course, has got issue with Mojo. He's carrying that on. They're fighting each other. Rowan and Ziggler tie up, and they're having issues. We wind up, you know, switching around a little bit. Sammy is fighting with Dolph, and of course the former Wyatt guys, Rowan and Harper, they're tying up, and just all kinds of craziness bouncing all over the place here. We go to commercial break with just bodies everywhere, man. It's just chaos going on here. And that's kind of the theme overall. It's kind of hard to tell you what all happened here because it was just six dudes hitting random moves on one another all over the place. Harper was looking awesome there for a good little bit. He went flying out of the ring with a tope suicida, or whatever you might want to call it, a flying zombie, if you are JBL. He went flying out of the ring and took somebody out, and then he gets back in the ring, jumps back out there, and does it one more again to take a couple more people out. He was flying all over the place, the big sumbitch, and he looked awesome doing it. Thankfully, Mojo was not a huge factor in this because, I mean, y'all can hate Jinder Mahal all you want to and complain about him winning and whatever, but good Lord, if Mojo Rawley would have won this, then maybe this late shift talking about SmackDown thing would have ended prematurely, because I don't know if I could live in a world where I have to sign on here and talk about Mojo Rawley as the number one contender or, good Lord, the WWE champion. That's me dry heaving right here live on the air over the prospects of Mojo Rawley as WWE champion. But fortunately, he didn't feature very heavily in this match, which was something of a surprise to me. I figured that they would make him look just like King Shit in the middle of all of this, just beating the crap out of everybody over the course of it. But that was not necessarily the case. He didn't look bad, you know, and he hit some pretty cool moves here and there, but he was far from the featured player. You know, nobody was really featured more than anybody else. And if there was anybody who really kind of stood out from the pack, I would say that it was Luke Harper. Like I said, I was really pulling for that dude. I was actively hoping for Luke Harper to get the victory here. But as we know, it was not meant to be. Talked about before, we get down towards the end. We've got Sammy face to face with Jinder Mahal there in the ring. Sammy winds up hitting the exploder into the corner. He goes over to the opposite corner to set up for the Haluva kick. The two dudes in white coats pop up. They are the Bollywood Boys, nobody knows who the hell these guys are. You know, I would assume the people in the live crowd and whatnot. If you watched, if you watched 205 Live here and there, I don't even know if they've been on 205 Live. I know they showed up once or twice in NXT, but they haven't even really been around a whole hell of a lot since the Cruiserweight Classic last year. So you would be forgiven for not knowing who the hell these guys are, especially if you didn't watch the Cruiserweight Classic, which a large portion of the audience did not. So, you know, and again, I don't say that as a slight to the Cruiserweight Classic because it was awesome. That's just sheer numbers, though. As of right now, the WWE Network has got around 2 million subscribers. Meanwhile, you've got around 3 million people who watch SmackDown on a given week, somewhere in or around that general vicinity. You know, that's a sizable portion of the audience who don't have WWE Network and who didn't watch the damn Cruiserweight Classic at the very least. So a lot of people probably had no clue who these dudes were, and it took me a minute for it to register, but of course, there they are, the Bollywood Boys. They interfere. One would assume that they are going to be connected to Jinder Mahal in some way, shape, form, or fashion, but we did not get any elaboration on it. I'm sure that they will elaborate on it a little bit as of Talking Smack, which should be, I'm guessing it's on right now, but thank you for listening to The Late Shift instead of watching that live. I'll be watching it when we're done here, and maybe that'll cause a little bit more discussion somewhere down the line next week or whatever the hell. But for now, the Bollywood Boys, they seem to be in Jinder Mahal's corner. They prevent Sami Zayn from hitting the Haluva kick. Jinder takes advantage of this. He locks him into a Cobra Clutch type maneuver. He turns that into a slam on the back of his noggin. He gets the one, the two, and the three. Your winner of this match, the new number one contender to the WWE Championship, currently held by Randy Orton, Jinder Mahal. And as mentioned, he celebrated afterwards. He got interviewed by Renee Young. He ran down Americans, and, you know, he he kind of halfway played the race card, but he also kind of played the I'm rich card and, you know, I'm smarter than you card. It was kind of a mixed bag of stuff. That's something they're really going to kind of have to be careful with because I don't know. Thus far, there's been a lot of talk, you know, Linda McMahon is in the Trump administration. And I know I'm not going to delve into talk of politics here. I'm just going to speak on straightforward facts. I'm not going to give my opinion on any of these things, all right? Because whether I'm conservative or liberal or whatever the crap it may be, that should be of no concern to any of you guys, just as it's not of any concern to me what, you know, your personal political beliefs and whatnot are. That is what it is. That's for you to talk about. We're all just all here to talk about the pretend fighting show, which has nothing to do with politics, unless they are unnecessarily inserted. And as mentioned, yes, Linda McMahon is in the Trump administration and the cabinet and whatnot, and there's a little bit of a hot button topic going on right now, you know, about the whole immigration thing. You know, that's been a hot thing for a good little while here, but it is especially heated at the moment. And Randy Orton is, you know, he seems to be on the side of he seems to be on that Trump more Trump-leaning side of the fence, if you will, or the wall, I suppose, in this case. Aha, ba-dum-ts. But, you know, people are calling him alt-right and stuff. I don't know if he necessarily goes that far. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. Hell if I know. I don't know Randy Orton. But what I do know is that, you know, he seems to kind of he espouses a views of that sort on his Twitter. It seems like almost not a week goes by that I don't see some sort of controversy following him around, and people are pissed off over something that Randy Orton has retweeted or said. So I could see there being some issues if we wind up with, you know, whether he is or not, but presumed by a portion of the audience, alt-right Randy Orton out there fighting a brown dude who just wants a shot and who's, you know, they could mess around and start a wildfire that they don't exactly know how to deal with. You know what I mean? And it could really storylines are storylines, but I don't like things that are quite that divisive. You know what I mean? I don't want to divide the wrestling universe, the WWE universe, straight down political lines. You know, I don't want it to become a thing where all of a sudden you've got this one group of people out there who are supporting Randy Orton, but then there's another group of people who are behind Jinder Mahal just because of his race or because they don't like Randy Orton or something, and then it becomes this great big old mess. You know what I mean? It just I don't see any room for that in professional wrestling. I hope that it does not turn into anything like that. I doubt that it will, but I hope that it does not. It certainly appears to me that it's just going to be a group of, you know, of Indian dudes who all of them are actually from Canada, if I'm not mistaken. You know, and that is going to be what it is. And Orton, you know, it's not like Orton has ever espoused any political views on SmackDown. He's never espoused political views in character on the show. You know, the character of Randy Orton doesn't have politics as part of his deal. He's just that creepy snake dude. Who burns people's houses down out of the middle of nowhere and crap. So, you know, I mean, it's just something that they're going to want to tread lightly with, I think. They don't want to push it too far because the backlash to that could be really unpleasant. There's been a lot of backlash lately for people who have been a bit tone deaf in the way that they handle certain things. You need to look no further than Pepsi, you know, and that controversy that recently popped up. So there are correct ways to handle certain things. There are incorrect ways to handle certain things. If it were me and I'm running a professional wrestling company, I just don't go within a mile of certain things. I don't know that they are setting anything up here, and I'm not saying that WWE is going to go out of their way to set anything up of that sort here, but what I guess I am getting at is that the professional wrestling audience could turn it into something of that sort. And that is something that I would be wary of and cautious of if I were WWE, just because you don't want to alienate any portion of your audience, you know, regardless of their political beliefs or lack thereof or whatever the crap. You don't want to alienate a portion of your audience if you are a publicly traded entertainment company. You know what I mean? So just kind of is what it is. Again, whatever people want to think politics-wise, that's their cross to bear, frankly. I don't really give a crap. I would just really rather not infringe upon my wrestling. You know what I mean? I like watching my wrestling program, and I don't want any kind of political crap in the mix of it. I get enough of that outside of wrestling. I watch wrestling as an escape. I don't need to hear bullshit like that in the midst of this thing that I'm trying to use as an escape from my, as of here late, kind of up in upheaval, personal life. You know what I mean? But anyways, we move on. Like I said, he had his stuff to say. Randy Orton had his stuff to say. Randy Orton, as I mentioned in the Heat Seeker, immediately kind of disregards him. He's standing right in front of this guy, and Jinder is seething and all this good stuff, standing there all jacked up, badass looking. And then Randy Orton basically turns his back on him to pay attention to the Titantron, where we got Bray Wyatt talking smack. Now, the smart thing to do, I suppose, would have been for Bray Wyatt to talk all his smack and everything, and it's all dark, and then the lights come back on, and Jinder Mahal attacks Randy Orton from behind and makes him pay for the fact that he turned his back on him, you know? How dare you turn your back on me? I'm the number one contender. I just beat all these other guys. I will teach you to... You ain't turning your back on me, man. I don't care who you are. But they didn't do that. Instead, Jinder just ducked out of the ring, I guess, while it was dark. Didn't take advantage of his opportunity to attack his future opponent, and whatever. But Wyatt hypes up the horrors match and this and that, and he says he's going to walk in as the Viper, but he promises that Orton will never walk out, never. He does the whole run thing, and then he disappears, and that's all that she wrote as it pertains to that. This is dragging down the show on all fronts at this point. Since they now span both brands, this is really just dragging down the show. I am so ready for this to be over with. We've only got one more week to deal with this crap. And then, you know, we'll have payback will come through. We'll get it out of the way, whether it's cool, whether it's not cool, whether it's some combination of the two, whatever it is. We'll get it out of the way. And at least we won't have to deal with this weird random crap in the middle of our shows anymore. By this time, a couple weeks from now, maybe I'll be looking forward to the fact that we've just got Jinder Mahal as the number one contender to deal with. You know what I mean? Because at least we won't have to deal with worms and crickets and whatnot on the screen and burning houses and whatever the crap is awaiting in the House of Horrors. You know, I'm ready to be done with that. Pardon me. Anywho, moving on from all that crap, once it is all said and done, they let us know that still to come, Naomi taking on Charlotte. We will also be getting an in-depth look at Shinsuke Nakamura. We go to commercial. When we return, we get exactly that. It is a cool video package on Shinsuke Nakamura. He was not in the building this evening. He was not on SmackDown. But they did do that cool video thing for him and hype him up real good and everything. And I'm going to presume that he was not on the show this evening because Dolph Ziggler was otherwise occupied. And if they had put Shinsuke in that number one contenders match, then everybody would have automatically assumed that he was going to win the thing. And that's just not his role as of this given moment, you know? So they wanted to hype him up a little bit, give people an impression of, okay, this is why you should care about this guy for all the people who haven't seen him. And they did a really cool video package on him. So awesome. Shinsuke Nakamura. Good stuff. Hopefully we get to see him next week. We then go to Renee Young, who is very adorable and Canadian, and is backstage with AJ Styles. She asks him who he would rather face now that he is the number one contender to the U.S. Championship. Would he rather face the current U.S. champion Kevin Owens or Owens' payback opponent, Chris Jericho? He doesn't really care. You know, either which way it goes, he's going to wind up winning, he seems to think. And I'm kind of – just some of the verbiage that was used over the course of this evening, I'm mildly confused as to what the deal is with Owens and Jericho, because I was of the impression that – and I talked about last week, whoever is the U.S. champion is on SmackDown, and I assumed that the loser goes back to Monday Night Raw. So I assumed that they traded for the U.S. title, you know, not necessarily for Owens or Jericho. You know, they traded for the United States Championship, and this pre-existing match with Jericho was what it was, which is why they would get Jericho if he won the U.S. title. But apparently, just the way that it was spoken about tonight, later on in the evening when Kevin Owens was on commentary and a few lines that were dropped here and there, it kind of seems as though no matter who wins – Kevin Owens is a part of SmackDown. So if Chris Jericho wins the U.S. title at Payback, then just kind of based on what they said, it sounds like Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho are going to be on SmackDown, which is bizarre. And I base that upon the fact that Byron Saxton started to say something and didn't finish it. So maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it sounded like he started to say, Kevin Owens, you know, how would you feel if you got to deal with both Chris Jericho and Sami Zayn here on SmackDown? Which would seem to indicate to me, maybe I'm dumb, but seems to indicate to me that all three of them would be on SmackDown and that Kevin Owens would have to deal with Kevin Owens and with Chris Jericho and Sami Zayn both. But I don't know, maybe I'm reading the situation wrong, maybe I'm completely wrong about all of that. But again, this is another instance where WWE just hasn't clarified this stuff. There shouldn't be confusion over these things at this given point. We're like a week and change out from a pay-per-view event that has these two big champions. Well, one is a championship match, and one of them, who the hell knows, I guess, at this point. There shouldn't be this many questions less than 2 weeks out from a pay-per-view, especially that has such ramifications upon the independent brands. It's just, it's very confusing, and I don't like it. I don't like it. I wish that they would just, they should have clarified these things. It would have been very easy to do. All it takes is just a few moments of lip service, and you can handle all that crap and clear up any confusion, but they didn't bother to do so. So, who the hell knows? All that AJ knows is that he doesn't give a crap if it is Owens or Jericho. He's going to beat either one of them. Baron Corbin proceeds to pimp up long about that time, though. He insults AJ Styles, and he's like, blah, blah, blah. You didn't even do what I did last week. I came out there and confronted Kevin Owens face-to-face, and then you just came out there and kind of stole my thunder. And Styles is like, well, you know, I've also beat you. And so they have some back and forth there. They're not liking one another very much, and thus continues the turn of AJ Styles, which I'm – it's pretty much – he's a babyface now. I mean, I don't even know that it's – it's kind of like with Seth Rollins last year, where – it was just kind of understood, okay, he's a babyface now, and nothing changed. It was just, we're just supposed to cheer for him now, and, you know, fortunately for AJ, everybody was already cheering him. So, but again, it's just a very sloppy way to turn somebody, to not really do anything to inspire it, to just all of a sudden be like, all right, here he is, and now he's a good guy. Yay! He's facing bad guys now. We see Charlotte backstage. She is walking presumably towards the ring, and she walks up on Tamina, Natalya, Carmella, and Ellsworth. They are all standing there as something of a unified front. So I guess maybe we're going to get some indication as to what Natalya's plan was. And it certainly appears as though Natalya's plan was to welcome her to SmackDown in a very snarky way, and then when open, you know, welcome her to walk through them, kind of, you know, like just giving up the old Red Rover there, if you will. And then as she walks through, Natalya kind of shoulder checked her a little bit. That's a really crappy plan, Natalya. I don't know what the... All right. Sure. One hell of a plan there, Natalya. Man, y'all really showed Charlotte. But anyways, Charlotte laughs it off. She doesn't give a crap. She's the queen. She makes her way, presumably, towards the ringside area. We go to commercial break. When we return, we have a promo for the New Day. Yes, the New Day are bringing the power of positivity our way soon. Reports floating around out there, rumors, if you will. I'm loath to call them reports, but rumors would have it that they are probably going to do like I talked about last week and maybe wait until Kofi is good to go before they bring them in, which I don't have necessarily a problem with that, though it could get old to see these damn New Day promotions for like however long it's going to take, weeks and weeks and weeks for Kofi to get better, but who knows? Who knows? Maybe they could, you know, maybe they could just get him out there and he could be the guy outside the ring and we could have Woods and Big E inside the ring, you know, just because Kofi can be on the show without having to compete and whatnot. But it depends upon the nature of his injury and how limited he is in movement in general and whatnot. So whatever. Anywho. It's time to go out to the ring. We have got Charlotte Flair making her way out there. We then have the SmackDown Women's Champion, Naomi. This is a non-title match, but if Charlotte gets the victory, she gets a title shot next week on SmackDown. Charlotte takes control early on and keeps it for a good portion of this. And I was very curious coming into this match because Charlotte, in my mind, I know that not everybody agrees with this, but in my mind, Charlotte is the elite as it pertains to women's wrestlers as of right now. She is the elite. If you can hang with Charlotte, way to go. I think that Charlotte is about the best that you can get out there right now, and I was curious as to whether or not Naomi could hang, because it's a different thing altogether to be Naomi and going out there and having the style of matches that she has had with an Alexa Bliss, and who is also quite good, but again, not quite as good as Charlotte, I don't believe, and some of these other people. I was very, very curious to see how Naomi would do in the ring with Charlotte, if she could hang, and if she would be able to work in some of the very kind of creative things that Charlotte has. A very creative offense, you know what I mean, and so does Naomi, so I don't know, two very athletic individuals here, and I was looking forward to seeing how they were going to interact with one another. And I must say I wasn't disappointed. I thought that this was very good. It was an excellent display of both of their athleticism. Charlotte was hitting all of her usual moves. She got that leg lock around the head thing where she was smacking her face into the ground, and then she did the whole dipsy doodle. Well, I don't know what the hell that thing is called, where she's got her legs locked up and then she just flips all the way over and like slams them down. It just, I don't know what the hell that's called, but it looks awfully damn cool. And Naomi did it quite well. And this was good, man. The only part that I didn't like about it was when Naomi did that stupid jumping up and down pogo style kicks. I really hate that move. It looks stupid every time anybody does it. And if you want to see something funny, go back and watch that when it happened specifically in the match, and watch Charlotte and how she is taking it. Because, I mean, how do you take that move? You're supposed to try to sell each of these kicks individually. So basically, Charlotte looks like a broken washing machine. She's just kind of slowly rotating a little bit back and forth, real stiff-armed. It was funny. And, you know, this is supposed to be one of Naomi's badass moves. It shows her athleticism. But instead, it winds up looking dumb. I do not like that move. Some of the other stuff that she does, some people give her crap for the rear view and stuff. I'm fine with that, you know? Yes, I can see where, you know, you coming off of the ropes and coming headlong into a flying ass would probably hurt. You know, getting an ass upside the face as you're bouncing off the ropes. Yeah, I could see where that would knock you a bit goofy. That is a viable move. It might be a little funny, but that's a viable move. Whereas her just pogoing in the middle of the ring and hitting all these real weak-ass looking kicks, I'm sorry. I just don't buy that. But anywho, that was the only really kind of wonky portion of it, and that's just something you kind of have to take with a grain of salt as it pertains to Naomi, because it is part of her offense. We got a commercial break in the midst of it. It was a good long match. We come back from break. Charlotte's still in control. She gets a pin attempt on Naomi, but finally Naomi's making a bit of a comeback. It doesn't last long, though. Charlotte counters, drops her on her neck for a very close two count. Naomi's making her comeback again, though. She winds up getting a two count off of a move on Charlotte. She unloads with big strikes and kicks. That's where she did the Kicking McGee thing. Naomi hits a big Hurricane Rana and a clothesline. She nails a stunner variation. She kind of barely hit it, but she hit it. And it knocks Charlotte goofy. More back and forth. Naomi winds up kicking Charlotte in the head, goes up to the top, and she hits a big crossbody block for a two count. She scoops Charlotte up onto her shoulders. Looks like she's going to do something, Samoan drop or something, I don't know. But it winds up being countered, and Charlotte is able to escape. She blocks a big kick from Naomi, nails her upside the head. She bounces off of the ropes, and it looks like Naomi is going for the rear view, but Charlotte either had it scouted or she just saw it coming, because she is able to stop and kick her in the back as she is up in the air trying to do the rear view. Her being Naomi in this situation, she hits the ground on her knees. Charlotte follows that up with the natural selection. We get the one, we get the two, we get the three. Your winner of this match and the new number one contender for the Women's Championship, Charlotte Flair. She gets a title shot next week on SmackDown. And over the course of this, we saw the furthering of Naomi's evil plot, Natalya's evil plot, which apparently consisted of Tamina, Natalya, Carmella, and Ellsworth all standing around and watching this match on TV backstage. So they played a really crappy version of Red Rover, and they bumped her, you know, Natalya bumped her with her shoulder as Charlotte walked by, and then they all stood there and they watched TV. That was the evil plot that she put forth. Right on. I'm guessing that another shoe will drop, and that, you know, I'm not much of a betting man, but if I were a betting man, I would pretty much say that Charlotte versus Naomi next week probably ain't going to go to any sort of conclusive finish. You know what I mean? I'm thinking that this is going to wind up, something wonky is going to happen, all these other people are going to get involved. We could even see a scenario where Charlotte gets a little bit of a face turn and is working with Naomi. You know, maybe they'll both get attacked by all these people and have to team up to fight them off or something to that effect. That is kind of the vibe that we're getting a little bit, but we'll see. I do get the feeling that this match next week, Charlotte versus Naomi, this is not going to go to a conclusion. This will not go, you know, not a clean conclusion. I don't think we're going to be getting a new champion, but I'm thinking there's going to be a lot of interference in some way, shape, form, or fashion. But tonight, Charlotte versus Naomi, I thought it was rock solid. Rock solid. It was exactly what I wanted it to be. There were a few little sloppy spots here and there, but that just is what it is because, again, that, you know, it's like, you know, if you don't like black lights, well, then you're just not going to like Naomi's, introduction and her entrance and all that. Well, if you don't like kind of halfway goofy pseudo-athletic moves, then, you know, you're not going to like that bouncy kick thing and all that crap. So just goes with the territory with Naomi, but I like her, you know, like 95% of Naomi I like. And this was a good match against Charlotte. I really enjoyed it. Afterwards, she stands tall and has her arms raised, the new number one contender. Still to come, they let us know it will be AJ Styles taking on Baron Corbin in the main event. We then see American Alpha. They are backstage walking, presumably towards the ringside area as we go to commercial break. When we come back, we see the guys from Ninja Warrior, Akbar, Gabaja Biamila, and Matt Eisenman, I believe his name is, over there at ringside. I'm amazed that I was just able to say Akbar Gabaja Biamila and say it correctly, and I did it twice. So good for me, Gabaja Biamila. That's not easy to say. that was pretty cool. Charlotte is then backstage again, and the part three of this evil plot, there's Carmella and Ellsworth and Tamina and Natalya, and they're mean mugging her, and she looks at them and then walks off and says, woo, off frame. And man, that Natalya, she sure is an evil genius, just laying these plots out, man. Charlotte's walking right into these traps of awkwardness backstage. Ooh, it's devastating. We then go out to the ring. Primo and Epico are standing out there. The Shining Stars? No, not the Shining Stars. They're still wearing Shining Stars tights. They have Shining Stars written on their respective asses, but they are not the Shining Stars. They are actually, when the graphic pops up, they are billed as Primo and Epico Cologne. And the announcers never referred to them as the Shining Stars. They referred to them as Primo and Epico. So it would certainly appear as though, finally, that dumbass gimmick, arguably the worst gimmick in the entire company, is gone. And that these guys, as I mentioned last week, I was very, very hopeful for, it would appear as though these dudes are going to get a fair shake to go out there and just wrestle based on their own merits. They don't have to have a stupid gimmick. They just get to be the Colognes, go out there and be good wrestler dudes and hopefully get over. And we'll see whether or not that happens. It certainly appears as though they're going to get the opportunity, though. They were facing off this evening against American Alpha. This was a relatively short match. I don't know who American Alpha pissed off or something like that, or maybe they're just trying to temper, you know, they don't have a lot of tag teams to work with over there on the SmackDown side of things, so I guess they don't really want to necessarily elevate one team above any and all other folks, which is kind of the position that American Alpha had been put in there for a little while. You know, they were just like, they're so much better than everybody, and it's obvious. And, you know, when in reality, you know, it was kind of like, you know, so it's like this being a big fish in a little pond, kind of, you know what I mean? So the Shining Stars are there now, though. No longer the Shining Stars. Primo and Epico. This was a pretty good little back and forth. We wind up, as per usual, Gable getting beat up pretty good. And then in comes Jason Jordan to wreck some shop. He comes in, nails a big suplex, hits a big thrust in the corner, and gets a two count on Primo. On Epico. Primo comes in to make the save. Gable sends Primo out to the apron at that point, and Primo and Epico wind up pulling another cheap shot. Epico is, he's got a hold of Jordan by the back, like he's got him in kind of a roll-up scenario, but he's not going, and then here comes Primo and kind of kicks him or knees him upside the forehead. That is just enough to knock his balance off. Epico is able to roll him up. We get the one, we get the two, we get the three. Your winners of this match are Primo and Epico Cologne. They have gotten the victory here over American Alpha. So again, American Alpha are in a little bit of a downswing at the moment. I don't think that it's any reflection upon them or anything like that. I think it's just kind of when you've only got X amount of teams on your roster, you know, and you're losing more and more by the moment because, I mean, now the Vaudevillains are gone. The New Day aren't around at the moment just because they can't be because one of them is hurt. They could still bring the other two in, and frankly, they might need to at this point, hell. But apart from that, what do you got? You got, like, the Ascension. You've got Breezango. It'd be nice to see them get a little bit, but I doubt that Breezango is going to be doing anything noteworthy in the immediate future. So, I mean, there's teams. There's just not really that many notable teams. You've got the Usos. You've got the Alphas. That's about it until New Day show up. So to elevate the Shining Stars is a thing that is smart to do, and the team in the best position right now to elevate the Shining Stars is American Alpha. So, I mean, it's just kind of the way the cookie crumbles in that regard. I don't have any issue trying to rehab the Shining Stars, though. I think that that is a good sign. I'm glad to see that the gimmick is gone and that they are no longer technically the Shining Stars. They are, once again, the Colognes. After the match, though, they run away, as heels are apt to do. They don't want to stick around and catch a butt-whooping. Jordan and Gable are in the ring. They seem to be rather upset by what just transpired here with all the cheating that went on. We're then going to look back at how Jinder Mahal became the number one contender to the championship earlier this evening. And they do specifically say that he's the number one contender to WWE champion Randy Orton. But apparently, I'm not the only one who had this point of confusion. Because earlier, you remember when I went and checked to see when Backlash was going to be on Wikipedia? It says Backlash 2017. It happens on May 21st, 2017. It's going to be Rosemont. The former Rosemont Horizon. It'll always be the Rosemont Horizon to me. They're in Illinois. And the main event says Randy Orton or Bray Wyatt versus Jinder Mahal for the championship. So apparently whoever is, even Wikipedia, doesn't know what the hell this whole championship situation is going on right now. All that we know is that apparently Jinder Mahal is going to be in the mix. So yippee-ki-yay. They let us know that we are going to be having the first ever Face of America Open Challenge here in just a little bit, featuring, of course, the Face of America, Kevin Owens. We then get a vignette for Lana's debut. She is dancing on a chair on the stage, and it's frankly kind of dumb, to be honest with you. I'm beginning to more and more get the impression that Lana is not going to be with Rusev anymore. I mean, I don't know how long Rusev is from coming back. I don't know what the nature of his injury is. And how much longer he's got until he's going to be healthy and shows up. But just kind of the way that they are presenting it, it doesn't look like Lana's going to be with Rusev anymore. It looks like she's going to have some sort of a dancing gimmick or the hell. But based upon what we're seeing at this point, it looks like she's going to have a friggin' lap dancer gimmick. I don't even really know. I've dated a lap dancer or two. And man, that looked like some lap dancing that was going on there. But that is what it is. Lana's showing up here before too terribly long. Good for her. Hopefully it'll be good stuff. That remains to be seen, I suppose. But we go to commercial break off of that. When we return, we've got Dasha Fuentes backstage talking to Ty Dillinger. She's like, man, the fans really have connected with you ever since you showed up. He's like, oh, I could explain it, but I have something right here that will explain it 10 times better. And we get a video package hyping him up and, you know, his appearance at the Rumble and yay for Ty Dillinger and all 10, 10, 10, 10, 10 and all this crap. And then when they come back from it, he says, that is why they call me the perfect 10. Sure, why not, dude? The guy's a glorified jobber. I know that a lot of people got a lot of love for Ty Dillinger, but again, make sure that you temper your expectations, because everybody wanted Tyler Breeze to be a raging badass when he came in, myself among that lot, but I was smart enough to recognize it for what it was. You know, Tyler Breeze sure did lose an awful lot when he was in NXT. You know, so why would anybody expect him to come to the main roster and suddenly be a raging badass? Same goes for Ty Dillinger. Ty Dillinger lost a lot in NXT, so there's virtually no reason whatsoever to expect him to come up to the main roster and all of a sudden just be the next big, bad, greatest thing to ever happen on SmackDown. The chances are that he's going to make some waves for a little while, but then he's going to settle nicely into, a middle-of-the-mid-card type role, you know, and that's fine. That's fine and well and good. I'm ready for this 10 thing to be over. You know what I mean? But I got nothing against Ty Dillinger. We then go to commercial break. When we return, out comes the WWE United States Champion, Kevin Owens, the first ever Face of America Open Challenge we're going to get here. There's already a jobber waiting in the ring. I was hoping that he would come out there and, like, call somebody out and that, like, you know, out would come Sin Cara or some such crap. But no, we weren't that lucky. Instead, we had a local wrestler guy out there standing in the ring. He didn't exactly look like the most threatening fellow in the entire world. We've got new, Tron and stage graphics and stuff for Owens. It's like a big picture of his face and all this stuff. They're really pushing this whole Face of America thing. I think it could wind up being pretty awesome if they play with it for a little bit longer here. I could get into it. I could definitely get it. I'm cool with just about anything that Kevin Owens wants to do, though, man. He makes his way out there. He stops the announcer dude from announcing him and says he's not good enough to do it. He needs to get out of here. So he introduces himself as the Face of America, being from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And everybody's like, boo, because, you know, we hate Canada or some crap. He then allows the jobber dude to say his name. His name is Gary Gandy. He is apparently from Louisville, Kentucky. I don't believe that Owens gave him permission to say where he was from, though. And when he did so, Owens got a bit upset. So he immediately gives the championship to the timekeeper. He drops the microphone, and he goes over and starts beating the sweet bejesus at old Gary Gandy. He beats him down into the corner. He picks him up. He throws him into the ropes, hits him with a somewhat lackluster pop-up powerbomb because old Gandy doesn't exactly have the best vertical in the world, and we get the one, we get the two, we get the three. So this was over quick, fast, and in a hurry here. The first ever Face of America Open Challenge is complete. Gary Gandy, shockingly, was not able to overcome the might of one Kevin Owens, the Face of America. After it's all said and done, though, Owens goes to ringside. He grabs the microphone. He insults the Americans. It's a bad night for American fans here, man. Just everybody talking smack to us. He tells them that they need to put their hot dogs down and listen, because as long as he is our United States champion, he will remain the face of America. He says that Chris Jericho will not be taking that away from him at Payback, and AJ Styles won't take that away from him either. Nobody will ever take that away from him. And now he's going to go over to the announce table. He is going to give some much-needed Canadian insight to the main event on commentary, because they sorely need it. He proceeds to say something in French. He tosses the mic down and makes his way over there to the commentary desk. In doing so, he takes away Byron Saxton's chair, which is always a fun thing to see. Then the music hits. Baron Corbin's making his way out there. He really does have cool like graphics and stuff as he makes his way out. I got love for Baron Corbin. Not as much as, you know, I was hoping I would have at this point, but got some love for Baron Corbin. I'm really impressed with what he's been able to pull off over the course of the last year. And he's acquitting himself quite well right now. So, yeah, number love for Baron Corbin. But he, of course, he makes his way out there. That is good stuff. And we wind up going to commercial. When we return, we get word from Austin Aries. He's hyping up a match against TJ Perkins on 205 Live and trying his absolute best to make somebody somewhere give a crap about TJ Perkins. He almost gets it done, but not quite, because it's really, really hard to give a crap about TJ Perkins. But Corbin is waiting in the ring on AJ Styles. AJ makes his way out there. They do not want any. They do not want any. I know they are scared because they do not really want any. He makes his way out there. We get a look back at him coming the number one contender last week. And then this match begins. A bit of back and forth. AJ nailing some kicks here and there. Corbin fires back with a big right hand, though, that drops AJ. Kind of sends him across the ring and drops him down. And he's like, all it takes is one, AJ. All it takes is one. Just reminding him of the fact that, you know, when it comes right down to it, Corbin's got the size, he's got the power advantage here. So that is what it is. They wind up outside the ring, though. They're all over the place. Corbin drops AJ face first on the apron, and we go to commercial with Baron Corbin standing tall on the floor. And, you know, the rule of commercial breaks applies here on SmackDown as well. Even if the heel is in control when we go to commercial break, when we come back from the commercial break, guess who's in control? If you said the heel, you guessed correctly. Baron Corbin is firmly in control of AJ Styles at this point. He brings it in there. AJ's trying to fight back. We get good back and forth there for a good little bit. Coming down towards the end, though, AJ tries for the calf crusher and winds up getting it on there, but Corbin is able to make it to the bottom rope to break up the hold. Very shortly afterwards, though, he is able to catch AJ coming off the ropes, nails him with a really nice-looking deep six, and gets a two count off of that one. But AJ is able to turn it around out there on the floor. He nails a big forearm. He gets a knee strike on him. He's looking like he's going to go for the Styles Clash, but Corbin is able to kind of backdrop him to a degree, and in doing so sends him crashing into Kevin Owens. They were over in that area of the ringside, and he sent AJ crashing into Kevin Owens. This leads to AJ running into the ring, you know, after Corbin has been taken care of there. He runs back into the ring. Corbin gets counted out, and we have ourselves a winner here. What happened was, that's what it was. AJ sent him over the barrier. He hit him with, like, a variation upon the forearm. So he sent Corbin over the barrier. And meanwhile, you know, the referee had been counting down the entire time. Of course, I didn't know exactly what point he was at, because the fans won't stop chanting 10 repeatedly. So I don't... The what chants were kind of annoying, but it was, you know, that just was what it was. The 10 thing, though, really gets on my nerves, because sometimes it's important to the narrative of a match to know where the referee's count is as it pertains to a count out. You know, if I had known that we were at 7 or something, for instance, when AJ nailed that running forearm to send Corbin over the barrier, I would have known, okay, we're setting up for, you know, maybe a count out here. Is he going to make it back in, et cetera, et cetera? But instead, all I heard was 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, and it makes me want to just walk around and slap people. I'm so done with that chant. It's getting to the point now to where it's ruining portions of matches for me. But I digress. I'm just being a cranky old man or something, I suppose, at this point. But at any rate, AJ is able to get back into the ring. Baron Corbin is counted out. AJ wins. Yay! Your winner of this match by countout is AJ Styles. He gets his arm raised as the music hits. Kevin Owens, meanwhile, he is outside there, and he is all upset and whatnot, and you know, he's not very happy with what transpired. Then we go to replays, and that's the way that we end here. Everybody is all standing in the ring, and I mean, AJ's all standing in the ring with his arm raised and all that good stuff. It's AJ's the highlight, baby. He's the highlight of the night as it pertains to SmackDown, so can't really hate on that one, man. A pretty good match here between Baron Corbin and AJ Styles. It was, I mean, what would you expect? Baron's absolutely serviceable in the ring. He had a few moves that were really cool where, you know, like he's getting Irish whipped into the corner. He slides under one portion of the ring and then kind of slides around to another portion and caught AJ looking, hit him with a big clothesline. And then he tried to repeat it later in the match, but it was really cool. It played in, it was good psychology because AJ remembered it, you know, and he was able to circumvent it this time. He was able to get away from it and he took Corbin down instead. That was some good psychology. Baron Corbin, of course, looking great here as of late, and AJ Styles, he just always looks great. So, man, good stuff. Good stuff all around, I thought. This was a pretty quality main event between Baron Corbin and AJ Styles. It was nothing amazing, you know, and it ended via a countout. But, hey, it was all right. That's all right. I ain't got no major complaints about the thing. It was pretty good. But SmackDown as a whole, man, how was that? Well, it was interesting. As we know, it was interesting. I'll unpack it all. We'll talk about everything just kind of in total, you know, put it all in a nutshell, and I will give this show a grade here in just a moment. But first, I invite you to check this out right here. Hola, listener Lynn. If you're looking for the best in pro wrestling podcast, look no further than Lords of Pain Radio. We kick off our week on Mondays as The Late Shift with Stephen Bell recaps and grades Raw shortly after the show goes off the air. Tuesday brings you a look at everything outside of the mainstream as Ms. Finn and Jeff hit you with Global Revolution. Wednesday brings your audio prescription for all things wrestling with The Doc on The Doc Says. And Thursdays are as good as you can get with Burn and Imp and the Perfect 10 Wrestling Podcast. Fridays wrap up the work week with the long-running and always great View from the Right Side of the Pond. And Saturdays take a look back at the rise and fall of World Championship Wrestling on WCW The Legacy Series. That's not all, as Sundays bring you our LOP Radio Aftershock recap shows after every WWE pay-per-view, as well as a multitude of special edition programs over the course of the year. With that sort of lineup, you can't go wrong. So subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever your preferred podcasting resource, and be sure to pass along a 5-star review if you like what you hear, because it's all about the fans' voice, your voice, right here on Lords of Pain Radio. All right, we are back in action here, and just a couple of things to add to that whole schedule thing that you just heard there. We had a special edition on Sunday. I mentioned it last night, but if you didn't catch that, I want to let you know this last Sunday we had a special edition with Zanman, our pal, Columns Hall of Famer Zanman. He presented a look at the last New Japan Pro Wrestling show. I believe it was called Sakura Genesis, and I keep wanting to call it Sega Genesis. So yeah, New Japan Pro Wrestling's Sega Genesis show happened here recently. There were some big things that came out of that, some real hot topics here in the world of professional wrestling. Zan did a whole show about it. We had Ms. Fan appear from Global Revolution and also from WCW Legacy Series. He popped in there for a bit of the conversation. Solid show there. If you are into New Japan or are just curious about what all the hubbub here recently about this one specific match and specifically this big pay-per-view and the fallout from it, if you're curious about all of that, well, there's your education right there waiting for you here on Lords of Pain Radio. And coming up this next Sunday will be the first ever Audio Fact or Fiction here on LOP Radio. If you are not familiar, Fact or Fiction, of course, is a column that has been running for years, almost 20 years on Lords of Pain, where gather together a bunch of people and ask them some questions. And basically, it's, you know, so-and-so is going to, friend, John Cena is going to retire by the end of 2017. Fact or fiction. You know, that's a real basic version of it. And in that case, I would say super-duper fiction. And anybody under the right mind would say fiction. It kind of gives you the gist of it, you know. It's a bit more in-depth than that. They're not giving us simple yes or no questions, and you're meant to expound upon it a little bit. Going to be some hot topics that are going to come up, I'm quite sure. Don't know what they are as of yet. Hopefully, I'm kind of hoping that they just hit them with us at the last minute. But I am probably going to be involved in that. I'm like 90% sure that I will be involved in that program. So tune in, check it out, and even if I'm not there, you got the Doc involved. Zanman, who I just mentioned a moment ago, he is going to be involved, and our pal from the right side of the pond, Mazza, will be involved in the show, and like I said, I'll probably be there. So It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. Factor Fiction this month comes to you via Lords of Pain Radio and an audio version. So you're definitely going to want to check that out. But as it pertains to SmackDown, well, it was interesting. As we have outlined over the course of this program, it was very interesting the way that all of this broke down. I'm not entirely sure what to think. Other people are having some different thoughts. I don't even know that anybody knows what to think. I'm looking at the comments here because as of right now, I'm looking at the SmackDown results post there on lordsofpain.net. And if you go down to the comments section, the top one on my list as of right now is this dude named Rainmaker. Who's all like, why is everyone mad at gender? And there's 17 replies. So let's see what they are. The first one is Big Papa Punjabi, because that is a creative thing to add to the conversation. And, you know, apparently people are making a big bunch of hype out of stuff. We have other people talking about, I saw one thing here. Oh man, this sucks. Jinder Mahal, really? After even after he gave Finn Balor a concussion. And it's like, man, you know, the guy underneath that really kind of – it really sums it up for me. He says, this annoys me because Samoa Joe has ended Tyson Kidd's career basically, and Nakamura broke Austin Aries' orbital bone. Accidents happen in wrestling, but they get called freak accidents because of the – you know, just – it says because of the independent background. It's not because of the independent background. It's just a physical business. So this guy started out saying what I thought, and then he wound up pulling into some other kind of bullshit about people who are all like, oh, these indies don't know how to work. And whatever. Bottom line is that, yeah, accidents happen. You know, people get their necks broken. People get their faces broken. All kinds of bad stuff happens. And a concussion, you know, every once in a while that stuff goes down. So it ain't Jinder Mahal's fault that Finn Balor got a concussion. So anybody who's out there who's pissed off about it for that, get over yourself. You know, as I said before, this ain't ballet, man. This is a physical industry that these dudes are in. Accidents happen every once in a while. So I am upset that it is Jinder Mahal only because we got no warning. If they had built up to it a little bit and given us a reason to invest in this dude a little bit more, I'd be on board with it right now, at least more on board with it. As it stands right now, they've got me in a position to where I am just like having to be cautiously optimistic, emphasis on the caution, you know, like I'm going to hope for the best, but I have no indication whatsoever that that's what I'm going to get because we've never ever been given any reason whatsoever to give a crap about Jinder Mahal up until this point. So if there's any issue to be taken with it, that is the issue that I take with it. But again, I'm going to wait and see. Maybe they wind up pulling something cool and, you know, we've got a month until this match goes down. Maybe it'll be pretty sweet, as I mentioned in the beginning of the program. But that was the most noteworthy thing to happen on SmackDown this evening, you know, or at least the most discussion worthy. I wouldn't even say it was necessarily the most noteworthy, but it was the most discussion worthy. There was also other stuff, though. The opening segment with Charlotte and with Naomi was pretty good. It set up that match really well and made me anticipate that match. The six-pack challenge, for what it was fine. You know, there was nothing amazing, but frankly, it was a bunch of, you know, pseudo-jobbers in there. You know, there was, when Dolph Ziggler is the biggest name in a six-man match, then you know that you're not exactly dealing with the upper echelon of talent. That's just the bottom line of it here. And, you know, nothing but love for Luke Harper and Sami Zayn and them, but come on. So, you know, it is what it is. Gender winning was definitely a shot, but we've talked enough about that. It was a decent enough little match for what it was, though. I didn't like the after thing, though, with Randy basically ignoring him to, you know, stare at a video of Bray Wyatt. Just, I don't like, I'm done with this angle between those two guys, frankly. I'm just done with Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt. At this point, it's dragged on a little bit beyond what I give a crap for, frankly. The video package for Nakamura was pretty sweet. Charlotte versus Naomi was – I thought it was the match of the night. I thought it was a really quality match between those two. I thought that Naomi she did really, really well. She acquitted herself quite well in that match, and I'm glad that she could hang with Charlotte in every way, shape, form, or fashion. I like that Charlotte could hang with her athletically. This was a good match, and this was just – they fit well together. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to whatever is to come next week, even though I get the feeling that whatever nefarious plot Natalia has cooked up is going to come to fruition next week, because it damn sure didn't come to fruition this week, unless her evil plot was to just make Charlotte feel mildly uncomfortable as she walked down hallways. We had Primo and Epico dropping the Shining Stars. They are no longer tour guides or friggin' timeshare salesmen or whatever the crap. They're just two badass Puerto Rican wrestler dudes, which is what they've always been. should let them be that a long time ago. Well, they finally are. They're not matadors. They're not timeshare guys. No, they're just the colognes. And they had a decent enough match against American Alpha tonight. It was a bit too short to really judge fairly, but it was decent enough. And it's good to see them getting a little bit of a shine, even though it does hurt a little bit to see American Alpha get a little bit of shine taken off. The Face of America thing was mildly entertaining. It was short and not exactly the greatest thing in the entire world. It was what it was. If you're into Kevin Owens being a dick, then you liked it. And I am into Kevin Owens being a dick, so I liked it. And Baron Corbin versus AJ Styles was pretty quality as well. We talked about that just a moment ago. I thought it was good stuff. Baron Corbin is a quality dude. He's impressing me more and more as we go along. And AJ Styles is AJ friggin' Styles. He's the best professional wrestler in the company as of right now. So overall, this was a pretty good episode of SmackDown, I must say, but it was bizarre, and it was weird to have that big random-ass Jinder Mahal thing happen in the middle that just left everybody. It took you out of the proceedings. If that had happened at the end of the show, then okay, but I don't know, it's just very weird as well. We didn't even really talk about this. Maybe it'll be the Heat Seeker next week if nothing else pops up, but it's odd to me that the U.S. title is being presented as a much bigger deal right now than the World Championship. You got Jinder Mahal as the number one contender going for the World Championship held by Randy Orton, who nobody is really invested in at this point. Meanwhile, Kevin Owens, one of the hottest heels in the entire company. AJ Styles, arguably the hottest wrestler in the company, period. That's his number one contender, and you got Baron Corbin in the mix, who's one of the hottest young talents. So the U.S. Championship seems to be a bigger deal right now than the world title, and I don't know what's up with that. We'll have to unpack that a little bit more. But as it pertains to this show, it was all right. The gender thing was just a little too weird. There was nothing necessarily wrong with the match, but it was just a little too weird, a little too jarring. It took you out of the proceedings and kind of made you scratch your head and kind of put a pall over the rest of the match, the matches of the evening, even though some of them were quite good, like Charlotte and Naomi. I'm going to give this one a B. This is a B for SmackDown because it was a good show, but it was cloudy, you know? It was cloudy because of the fact that you were just kind of like, what? And that vibe stuck around, unfortunately. I will be back, hopefully, on Sunday with Factor Fiction. You're definitely going to want to tune in for that. And, of course, check out everything else here on LLP Radio. I'll be back Monday for the Late Shift after Raw, and next Tuesday with the Late Shift after SmackDown. Going to be good stuff, my friends. Until whenever it is that we speak to each other again, though, you guys take care of yourselves out there in the really real world, and remember that nothing is trivial, all right? All right, much love, guys. We'll catch you next time.
Bye, everybody. Bye.